Each fortnight, this podcast takes you behind the scenes to discover the interesting backstory behind those who are making and have made a success of their careers. What motivates them and their challenges may well give you some ideas for your own career development. Our podcasts are proudly sponsored by ANZIF and their Careers in Insurance Initiative. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
So Jonathan Hubbard has a background in specialty loss adjusting and business management. In 2016, he joined Crawford Australia, initially as head of business improvement, before being elevated to chief client officer. He then enjoyed a period of 5 years as one of Crawford's most senior executive adjusters within global technical services, before being appointed president in 2023. Welcome, Mr. President, to Business Made Personal.
Thanks, Mark. I'm still getting used to that title, and a lot of my friends have great fun with it, as you can imagine.
Absolutely. But seriously, though, congratulations. I mean, you've worked very, very diligently in the loss adjusting area for some time. So it's a great accolade, isn't it, for you to be appointed in that role for Australia?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's the culmination or the latest step, I guess, in a long journey of around 30 years in the Australian insurance market. And it's been very pleasing to be given that responsibility, and it is a huge responsibility to lead the Crawford team in Australia. I'm very proud of that.
Brilliant. So let's talk about that journey a little bit, and let's go back to your country of origin, UK. What was life like for you growing up over there, Jonathan?
Well, I grew up in Leicestershire, the son of a farming family. So my father was third generation farmer on that property, and my brother, who still farms it part-time, is fourth generation. So very proud of my heritage, growing up on a dairy farm, a great childhood, strong memories of playing with my friends around the fields, and really love that rural lifestyle. Also, my father was a Methodist lay preacher, and my mother's father was also a lay preacher. And so fairly strict upbringing, and I'd say a strong moral code, Mark. Very taught about being very respectful and treating everyone the same, which is something I've tried to follow through throughout my life. Being kind to people, which was always a very key value that was drilled into me, but for brought up in a strict way. I'm not a religious person, but I think I took a lot from that. Yeah, when you're a little kid in that environment, it's not particularly cool to be going to chapel at night with your dad, going around the various villages and keeping your head down that your mate's not going to necessarily see you rocking up. So it was all good fun. But strong memories of that English lifestyle. But as I mentioned, my brother was always going to be there, or he was the farmer, the oldest of two boys, and so for me it was a question of, well, what am I going to do? Marcus was the one from a very early age who was out, or toys wise he'd always have the toy farm and I had the toy soldiers, so I was never going to be the farmer, but so that was how I started out.
Now, I think too, you mentioned that when we were talking offline that, you know, there was also a challenging time being on the farm with your father as he got older.
Yes. Well, Dad was born 1927, and he was a little older when he got married. He was 38, which for that time was quite old. Mum was 10 years younger. When I was born, Dad would have been 43, I think, and he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease not long after, well, when I was a little tot, I think. And I think it was known that he had a tremor, but he wasn't diagnosed for a little while. Throughout my childhood, Dad was, I wasn't conscious of it when I was a little kid, but probably from being 10, 11, 12, it became more of a factor as his health deteriorated. So, yeah, certainly through my teenage years, Dad's illness was a factor, and he progressively got sicker and sicker and actually died. I emigrated in 1994, and he died in 1995. So, yeah, when I was 20, 25 or 26. So it was that was probably a very considerable factor in my childhood, sort of, but more probably how it affected mum and in those latter years as the carer. So
I was actually going to ask you about that because, you know, if you were born later, your brother was obviously a little bit older than you, but did your mum then have to cope with the farm on her own, or was there someone there to give her a hand?
No, Dad was quite stoic. And mum was a classic farmer's wife, so she was always very hands-on. So it was a dairy farm, and Dad continued to milk the cows until probably I was around 13 or 14, and then it just got too much. So the dairy herd, that was a very sad day when the dairy herd went. But mum was always very strong. So we had sheep as well. So again, strong memories of lambing time and bringing the cade lambs in and feeding the cade lambs. And mum was always very heavily involved in that. I think it was probably when I remember when I was about 18, Dad had a bad fall, an accident. He was doing something that he shouldn't have been doing on a roof, which sounds really bizarre when I say it now, but you couldn't really stop him. He was a bit of a dynamo, even though he was very sick and he had a bad head injury. So that from that point on, that mum became more of a, I'd say almost not a full-time carer, but it was getting pretty close to that. So she had some nursing support. And it was really, my brother went to agricultural college, and it was about Dad, until he had his accident, really, it was about him hanging on as long as he could until Marcus was 19, 20 and finished agricultural college, and then he could then take on the reins. And the challenge for him was that my great-grandfather acquired a lot of farmland in the 1920s, because there was change to the death duties on following the First World War. So a lot of the large estates, if they had a death in the family, they, you know, it often triggered a sale of land. So my great-grandfather acquired a lot of land, but that was progressively diluted through the generations. So my dad's farm was quite small, and it made money as a dairy farm when Dad was in his younger years, but by the time he was handing it over, it really wasn't viable in reality. But Marcus had a very game, worked very hard for a lot of years to maintain it. But it was really those latter years of Dad's health where mum got to the point where her health was suffering a little bit before Dad died. So it was a journey.
And you, so at what stage did you actually leave the farm and head into the city, or did you just migrate straight away?
Yeah, so when I left school when I was 17, I wasn't a great student and wasn't really clear on what I wanted to do. I was always, I thought deeply about things, but I didn't really have a strong confidence about what that would translate into work-wise. So when I left school, I worked for a firm of solicitors in Grantham. I started essentially as a clerk, and I did that for 5 years, and it was a great work experience because I think my first day I was interviewing a lady in a police cell. I think the parlor solicitor and the staff sergeant thought it would be quite funny to give me a present on my first day on the job. So that was a good experience. But I did all sorts of stuff. I did that for 5 years in Grantham, and then got to the point where I was like, well, what am I going to do? I'm still living at home. I decided that I did some study, but I decided that I didn't want to be a solicitor. And so that's actually when I first traveled to Australia. I said, okay, my break is I'll go for a working holiday and travel for a year plus. And I went to the States initially and then arrived in Australia on a working holiday. And that was probably my period of my life when it was around working out what I really wanted to do. And then, yeah, I met my first wife, Paula, when I was on that working holiday, went back to the UK. I was back in the UK for about 18 months whilst working out what we were going to do. And that ended up being about emigrating to Australia. But whilst I was in England, I worked for the Nottingham City Council as in their insurance claims department. And so that was my transition into insurance. And then when I emigrated in 94, And at that point, I was, fair to say, I was switched on and ready to go in my career. I always say to people that everyone's timing is different. And sometimes people think that school, university, it's a very linear progression. I don't think that's, look, for some people that may be, it certainly wasn't for me. And depending on your life journey and your experiences, what shaped you and your motivations, what your motivations may be at different points in time. But for me, when I was sort of 22, I thought, okay, I've got to work out what I'm going to do. Met some really interesting people when I traveled, including a great friend of mine when I traveled. And yeah, that was the switch went on. And then so by the time, having had that period in England for 18 months or so, when I arrived in Australia, it was like, okay, this is the time for me. And I had a couple of options, but the one, I was interviewed by Keith Henry, who was then the New South Wales state manager for what was JB Robbins, or it might have been Edmund Robbins at that point. And I was taken on as a trainee liability adjuster. So that was my first substantive role in insurance, I would say. That was really the start of my journey.
Yeah. And look, a lot of people do opt for different careers in the insurance industry. So you might start as a loss adjuster, but you might end up in underwriting or broking, or you've really made a career out of loss adjusting. What is it about loss adjusting that kept you so engaged for all of this time?
Well, loss adjusting is a funny profession. Usually it's a secondary career, whether you're a lawyer or an engineer or an architect or work for a building firm or any myriad of things, but usually it's a secondary career. And it's not rocket science, but some people have an aptitude for it. And some people, you know, you can be super bright, but struggle really with the stress of it. I guess I had a reasonable aptitude for it and was relatively good at it, mainly from my side on the people front. I've always enjoyed connecting with people and managing through the aspects of a claim. So I transitioned into a property adjuster fairly quickly. I enjoyed that more than liability. And yeah, really love the art of loss adjusting. And but that said, I've been fortunate working with the businesses that I have worked. It's not just been about loss adjusting. So, and Crawford is a claim services business, you know, so I've worked in building consultancy, TPA, managed repair, legal services through, you know, HPA, our law firm now. So it's not just been loss adjusting, and I've sort of traversed between a production technical loss adjusting role and management and leadership roles in both of the businesses that I've worked for, which is what's now Sedgwick, as I've mentioned, and Crawford. So I've never felt the need to go and work for an insurer, for example, or a broker. So I enjoy the space that I'm in.
Let's talk a little bit about that, the experience that you've gained, you know, to get you up to this current role as president of Australia for Crawford. When you took on that role in 2023, have you had to make any changes personally to adapt to the new position?
Yes, certainly. I mean, one of the things, I joined Crawford in 2016, and as you said, initially head of business improvement and then chief client officer. But after a couple of years, I wanted to go back to a loss adjusting technical role, and that's for a couple of reasons. One, I felt that I wanted a really fresh challenge for me at that point in time. It wasn't, I think some people get caught up in titles, and I was on the executive team, but that didn't trouble me. I thought, well, look, if the challenge for me at that point was I haven't been loss adjusting for 10 years, a nice thing for me to do would be to reestablish myself as a senior loss adjuster in the market. And so that was key for me. But also, when I joined Crawford, I'd say I was probably a little bit seen as they were then, the Cunningham Lindsay guy, having been there for 21 years. So I also wanted to gain some credibility in Crawford business as a loss adjuster. And as I said before, so I enjoy the fact that I've got the loss adjusting chops as well as the leadership experience. So it's about bringing both of those. Coming into the president role 6 months ago, it's reminded me of a lot of those leadership challenges and getting back up to speed with the difference in the disciplines. So yes, it has been a really interesting start. And the big thing is that we're a business of over, you know, around 650 people. It varies from, you know, depending on the nature of our business with catastrophe and the like. But there's always a lot of issues to manage. We've got six service lines, so there's a lot of things to, as a leader, to hold and hold that energy across the business. I mean, I try to find the balance between knowing when to dive into the detail and when to stay out, and how I empower my team so that they can feel that they've got the ability to, you know, I'm not breathing down their neck all the time. So coming back into a leadership role, it's been really interesting and enjoyable to dance with that a little bit and work out how I effectively lead the team. And I'm sure I've made mistakes and will continue to make mistakes. Yes, so far so good, I think.
Hey, mistakes are the essence of learning, aren't they? I want to talk a little bit about that whole leadership thing. And I would like to ask you about, you know, during your career, have you sort of had leaders that you've emulated or that you've looked up to that have really influenced you in what you do?
Absolutely. And I think that I was extremely fortunate to work with a number of exceptional people. I mentioned Keith Henry early in my career. So he became the CEO of Jamie Robbins Cunningham Lindsay Sedgwick. And Keith has been out of our market for a long time, but he was an exceptional man and led that business very well. Kieran Rigby succeeded him and came over from Ireland and did a great job. David Radcliffe, who was CEO of that business in Australia and became Global Chief Operating Officer, different skill set to his predecessors, but again, a very super bright and great operational manager and leader. And Harry Patel, who was succeeded David, who was a great entrepreneur and is a good friend, and also became Global Chief Operating Officer of that business. So I was very fortunate to work with those guys. And I've also, in recent years, worked with Andrew Bart, who's a bit of a doyen of the Australian market and a great man.
Yeah.
I report to Andrew, and I really enjoy that. The challenge with reporting to Andrew is he knows this business inside out. So even if I was trying to get something past him, I don't think I could. But he's good. And Rohit Verma, who's our global CEO, who I've got to know reasonably well recently, and yeah, very impressed with Rohit. He's a very strong people leader.
So, Jonathan, you mentioned a few people from a business perspective that have been major influences in your career. Just in terms of your personal side of things, you know, when you leave a job after many, many years, how did you cope with all of that?
Well, I was lucky because my wife Ange was a huge support for me. And I love her dearly. And I'm lucky because she does have some experience in our industry, and she has always been a great source of counsel and advice and a wise head. So that, I mean, she's number one. And also I've got some very good friends that I've built in the industry over the years who have helped. And, you know, at times of adversity, it's who picks up the phone and talks to you, you know. And sometimes the phone goes a bit quiet, Mark, but you remember who calls and who's there when you might need a little bit of support. So that's a big part of it. And also, I'm slightly different, but my daughter Grace, who's, you know, I'm very proud of, and it's always nice to have family along the journey with you and as your career progresses and their young life progresses.
Well, they're often the most important, right? Because they're the ones that are there regardless of which company you're with or which job you've held, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, I think we have to keep sight of what really matters in life. And yeah, family is the most important thing.
You know, this podcast is called Business Made Personal. I want to switch from the business side to the personal side, if I may, Jonathan. I want to ask you, looking back over your life, and you know, you've certainly mentioned a couple of challenges that you've faced. If I was to ask you, what's the hardest challenge you've had to overcome to date, what would you say it was?
I would say it career-wise, it would be the end of my time at Cunningham Lindsay, having been there for 21 years, and all good things come to an end, and that was very challenging for me at the time, very difficult. I think I was very determined to have apply a positive psychology to it, and to, you know, what learnings that I could take from that, and to move forward, because, you know, you always reflect, and it's easy to say, oh, well, it was, you know, to externalize reasons, and, you know, I don't want to get into all of the nitty gritty, but what that may mean for you moving forward, and how you can take those experiences and how you can evolve the way you work and work with others, and probably also improve my empathy and how I work with people from those learnings. And that was probably the biggest career challenge. And then personally, other than, yeah, some of the challenges growing up as a kid, as I've mentioned, when my first marriage came to an end about 20 years ago. So inevitably that's causes a lot of reflection and learnings. And again, the most important thing is how you look forward positively.
Yeah, 100%. And I understand a little bit about what you're talking about, having been through some of those issues myself. If I was to say to you, what were the learnings you took out of those that you've actually applied to, you know, because one of the things you mentioned was that learning to be more empathic. Do you think you weren't as empathic back then?
I think I've always been a reasonably strong people person, and I've always connected well. So I think that inevitably, as you have difficulties for whatever reason, then you naturally become more empathetic and understanding, and a little softer as you get wiser. So I think that's a maturing component of it. I think one thing that helps is that the sooner in your experiences that you realize that life is difficult, it's not meant to be easy, and that you accept that the challenge of that, and it's one of life's great truths. And I think that's one of the most important things you can, is to embrace that and take responsibility for what you can build in a positive way, rather than being a victim of experience or circumstance.
Yes. And look, one of the things that seems to happen, well, it certainly happened to me anyway, is that, you know, when you leave a role for whatever reason, or when your marriage finishes, your self-worth takes a bit of a smacking, right?
For sure. And one of the things for me, so I was, 25 when I came to Australia. So I've been here almost 30 years now. My substantive career has been here. A lot of my friendships are industry related. My life in Australia is very closely linked to my work and those experiences. So when you have those challenges that you're faced with, it can be quite, really impactful.
So looking at your new role, you've just taken on the role as President of Australia. What would you say is the most challenging part of that now for you, Jonathan?
So I talked before about holding a strong energy and driving. So it's a bit of it is around taking responsibility for driving the energy and culture of the organisation. Always think there's four elements to my role. So there's the client piece. So, and one of the good things is that a lot of my peers for insurer clients I've worked with for 30 years from early stages of their career. So you build that trusted relationship for a long time. And if any of them are listening, they know who they are, who I've got very close to over the years. So that's, you know, the client relationships is a huge part of it. Financial component. We're the business has always had a strong financial performance, and I enjoy that side of the work. The third key component is the people, and to ensure that the team see Crawford as the preferred vehicle for them, whichever of our services that they operate in, and that they have the opportunity to develop and grow, and that there's no barriers to them growing their career. So that, to me, is a key responsibility. And last but not least is the strategic direction and being very clear on the strategy of the business and executing that. And so that the whole business feels that and we're driving collectively towards on that journey.
Yeah. So you've been in the industry for quite some years. If I was able to give you a magic wand and you could change anything about the industry, Jonathan, what do you reckon you'd change?
Well, one of the things that I would like to see is a stronger focus on education. And I think that that is something that has been lost a little bit. When I first started and was doing my affiliate ANZIF exams, that was the first batch that we did, because we used to have to do the affiliate and the associate exams before you could do your chartered loss adjuster exams. And I remember the hall used to be, seemingly be hundreds of people in there. And you'd remember those times, Mark.
I do.
Even by the time I got to the end of my studies, it had fallen off quite significantly. And I know, yes, very different now in terms of education on demand, but I don't think that there's the number of people committing to study and education. So I think that the importance of technical skills, I'd like to see the industry as a whole, whether that's insurers, brokers, service providers, including loss adjusting firms, etc., have a stronger commitment to education and skill development. So that would be probably the single thing that stands out to me.
You are speaking my language, my friend. You're 100% on the money. Hey, I want to take you back to that young child who's growing up on a farm in England. If you were able to go back to that young Jonathan Hubbard, what advice would you give him?
Geez, that's a good question. I would say be confident and believe in yourself and don't worry too much about stuff that you can't control. Because I think certainly in my earlier years, I did probably worry too much about what other people thought or issues that I were out of my control. And it was probably only when I was a little older and the penny dropped. And that goes with becoming more confident and also seeing how other people develop their careers. But I think when you realize that you have got the makings and the chops and the confidence to really go for it, I think that makes a huge difference. So for anyone that's doubting themselves, I think, yeah, that self-belief and confidence is key. I remember when I started in my career and I found loss adjusting really hard. I thought, geez, this is a tough gig, you know? And there was some few people kept coming in of similar age to me and they were seemingly doing better than I was. You know, they were buzzing along and speaking very confidently. And I thought, geez, I must be a bit slow here. But most of them fell away, you know, they disappeared because it was just bluff and bluster. And so I think you learn that it isn't easy. It's hard work. You've got to put the hard yards in. And there's no easy path. There's no shortcut. You have to do the hard work. And what I would say to anyone is you absolutely get out of your career what you invest in it. So it really is the long and the short of it. You have to, it's down to you. Yes, find good mentors, work in an organization that gives you opportunity to advance, but it's ultimately down to you.
100% right. And there is absolutely no shortage of opportunities, I don't think, in our environment. And it doesn't matter what your background is. There is a role for you at insurance. Just a couple of final questions before I let you go, Jonathan. The first one I'd like to talk to you about is in terms of your evolutionary process going from being on the tools to being a manager, how did you manage that? How did you navigate that sort of those challenges?
One of the key things was that from fairly early in my career, I was the beneficiary of leadership coaching and recipient of some really top class leadership training, almost a mini MBA in our industry and how to grow and develop the business. So that certainly helped me very much in transitioning from a loss adjuster into a manager and leadership and growing businesses, which is great fun. Transitioning back to loss adjusting, it's a bit like riding a bike. And of course, I'd done that for a long time, but that was difficult to start with because you have very few claims, and you're going around the market saying, "You remember me?" And your peers, who I'm not going to mention because that'll irritate me if I give them a plug. You've had that 10-year gap where you've been off the tools and they've been peddling madly. So it was good fun to get back and reconnect those relationships from getting instructed as a loss adjuster. So it was good. That was really good fun, and I really enjoyed the challenge of that. And as I say, I mean, I'm still extremely passionate about loss adjusting, and it's a fantastic profession, and the ability to work with insurer clients, brokers, and their customers to get to a conclusion that everybody's really happy with, and it's a great discipline.
Brilliant. And final question for you, Jonathan Hubbard, President of Australia for Crawford. What is next for you?
Well, Mark, it's about 6 months I've been in the role, and I've got heaps to keep me engaged. So I'm really looking forward to growing the Crawford business and working with our clients and our team to, as I say, grow the business. So I think that's a great challenge for me, and there's no lack of engagement and struggling with things to do. So I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into that for a few years. And look, who knows what's around the corner? I'm certainly not thinking about. I'm very young, Mark. So we'll keep marching on, and see. You never know what's around the corner.
100%. And also, you know, you're following in someone's footsteps who'd been in that role for many, many years, right?
Well, I was probably remiss. I mentioned Andrew, but I didn't mention Tim Jarman, who's a very good friend of mine and led the business for the last 5 years. And Tim did a fantastic job and a tough act to follow. And he's still involved in the business, thankfully. So, yeah, Tim's, I'll say, 80% retired now. But it was great also to work with him. But truly privileged to have the role, and don't take it lightly. And I like to think that I'm doing it for the right reasons. It most certainly isn't about ego or status. I've learned over the years that really matters very little. And what matters is doing things for the right reasons. So, I represent the broader team, and I don't mean that in a trite way. I sincerely mean that. It's about doing the best I can, and hopefully some of the experiences that I've picked up, I can apply that and do things the right way and work with our team and clients, do things properly and respectfully. And I do believe that if you do things the right way, you'll get the right results because you're doing things for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, listen, good luck in your new role. And thank you so much for being on Business Made Personal, Jonathan.
Thanks, Mark. You're a champion. Really enjoyed that chat.
Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.